Five gold earrings.
Okay, let's get in the mood here. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode, number 32 of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. Yes, I realize I sound a little nasal today. I apologize. But I am battling through. I am taking all types of medicines, all types of remedies. I have Halls. I've got Coldies. I've got tea with honey. I've got Advil. You name it. I've got it. Trying to battle through this. I did not have a cold at all. Every time I shovel, it seems like, even though I bundle up, I seem to get a cold. Thankfully. What's that?
You're allergic to work?
I know. Thankfully, I did a play this last week, so maybe my resistances were down too, because I was out every night till 11 or 12 o'clock at night, and so who knows if my resistances were down a bit. But thankfully, the play ended on Sunday night, and I did not have this. And so I woke up Monday morning, and I was completely congested. My goodness, I mean, it was just unbelievably. I was much more nasal, and I was like, I couldn't even breathe. But thankfully, none of that came through the play, because I was doing a reader's kind of like a radio play version of A Christmas Carol, and I played Marley's Ghost. And so I really had to scream. And I was using different voices, and there's a ponderous chain. And I mean, I don't think ghosts catch colds. So it would have been odd if my Marley's ghost would have been all nasal. Hello, Scrooge.
Maybe that's just your take on Marley.
Yeah. You know, Scrooge, it's no great thing dying, believe me. And look at the way I sound. You want to change your life, believe me, because if not, you got to go through the rest of eternity all clogged and sounding like this. But so thankfully that that didn't happen. So I am battling through. But part of this you're also going to hear my voice very clearer, also different, because even though I am taping this on the 21st of December, it will air the day after Christmas on the 26th, or it will be posted, I'm sorry. And so I thought it's Boxing Day in the UK, so it still counts as Christmas. And last year, I think it was almost to the day, I was doing some fill-in work on WGN Radio, and I had an actor friend of mine who we did a production of It's a Wonderful Life together several years ago. He played George Bailey and I played Mr. Potter. And we really had a good chemistry. Never worked with him before, but we just had a real natural chemistry. And the scenes that we did together as George Bailey and Mr. Potter were just so fun to do. And I remember, I came in at the last second. Their Mr. Potter got sick and went into the hospital. And so I found out about this. And I only did three. I found out the night before I went on. I had to learn all of my lines in less than 12 hours.
How did you do that?
Yeah, well, I was up all night. And I was in the basement doing my lines, doing my Mr. Potter. And my wife's like, what are you screaming about down there? I'm like, I've got to learn my lines. And so I was able to, although I did have a little envelope with some key words on them in case, you know, to spark me. But I did get them. But I only did the last three shows, and I had such a good time doing it because I love that play and I love that movie. And so last year I was like, you know, I would love to recreate that again. So I called my friend David Vogel, who is an actor here in Chicago, and he came on the radio last year. And we did the four key scenes between George Bailey and Mr. Potter. And so I thought it would be fun to play those back for you in case you didn't hear them, because I don't even remember what time I did those. It may have been 2 a.m. in the morning, who knows? So I don't know how many people heard them. Even if you did hear them, you should hear them again, because I think they came out really nice. I enjoy hearing them, and it also gives me a chance to rest my voice. So there's always ulterior motives here on the podcast. But I just as a kind of a post-Christmas, you know, your blue Christmas mood, you still want that, you know, Christmas comes, we wait for it, and then it finally comes, and then, you know, sadly, Christmas Day, for whatever reason, still is 24 hours. We don't get any extra hours on Christmas, and it always goes by, seems to go by very fast, and you're sitting there going, what just happened? So here's my way of extending that Christmas spirit out to you a little by playing some of these clips. So this is David Vogel, a actor here in Chicago, and me playing. David is playing is playing George Bailey, and I am playing Mr. Potter. So the first clip is when George's father dies, and George and Mr. Potter have a confrontation about the building and loan.
We're going to do a few scenes, those key scenes that you love so much between George Bailey and Mr. Potter. And we're going to start that right now.
It was nice of you to come, Mr. Potter.
Well, I'd say your father was the building and loan here in Bedford Falls, George.
I agree, Mr. Potter.
Of course, he wasn't a businessman. That's what killed him. Oh, don't get me wrong. I don't mean any disrespect, George. God rest his soul. Peter Bailey was a man of high ideals, so-called. But without common sense, that can ruin this town. So, George, at our next Board of Trustees meeting, I'm going to make a motion.
A motion?
Yes, that's right, a motion. To dissolve the institution and turn its assets and liabilities over to receivership.
But Mr. Potter...
Now, take this loan application the board's to act on this morning. To Ernie Bishop, you know, this fellow that sits on his brains in this taxi. Anyway, I happen to know that the bank turned down his loan. But he came to the building and loan, and we're willing to build him a house worth $5,000. Now, why?
Well, I handled that, Mr. Potter. Well, you have all the papers there, his salary, his insurance. I can personally vouch for his character.
Oh, he's a friend of yours?
Yes, sir.
So you shoot pool with the manager's son. You can borrow money. What does that get you? What does that get the building and loan? A discontented, lazy rabble instead of a thrifty working class. And all because of a few starry-eyed dreamers like Peter Bailey stir them up and fill their heads with a lot of impossible dreams.
Just a minute, Mr. Potter. Now, hold on. You're right when you say my father was no businessman. I know that. Why he ever started this cheap penny any building and loan, I'll never know. But neither you nor anybody else can say anything about his character. Well, because his whole life was... Well, in the 25 years since he and Uncle Billy started this institution, he never once thought of himself or saved any money. But he did help a few people get out of your slums, Mr. Potter. And what's wrong with that? Yeah, just remember something. That this rabble you're talking about, they do most of the working and the living and the paying and the dying in this community. Well, is it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath? Well, my father didn't think so, because people were human beings to him. But to you... A warped, frustrated old man, they're cattle. Well, in my book, my father died a much richer man than you'll ever be.
I'm not interested in your book, young man. I'm talking about the building
and
loan.
I know very well what you're talking about. You're talking about something you can't get your fingers on, and it's galling you. Yeah, that's what you're talking about. Well, thank you for stopping by, Mr. Potter. I'll see you at the meeting.
But you're not on the board,
I
George.
Hold my father's proxy, so I can attend and cast a vote. You see, the way I see it, Mr. Potter, is the people of this town need our family's one-horse institution, if only to have some place where they can go without having to come crawling to you.
Sentimental hogwash. I'm still going to make my motion, George, and we'll see who has the power in this town.
Ooh, the plot begins to thicken. Next scene. If you recall in the story of It's a Wonderful Life, George gets married to Mary, and as they are about to leave on their honeymoon, the bank crashes. And all of Bedford Falls is thrown into a financial turmoil. And so George has to do what he can to keep the building and loan open. And that includes confronting Mr. Potter.
When in doubt, we can always go with the wind.
Right, right. It was outside.
It was outside.
Mr. Potter, to what do we owe this unexpected visit?
George, there's a rumor around town that you're going to close your doors early. Is that true?
No, not for another 10 minutes. That's our regular closing time.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. George, are you all right? Do you want me to call the sheriff?
What for?
Well, mobs do get pretty ugly sometimes,
I can assure you all of our customers are very polite.
Yes, I'm sure, George. I'm going all out to help in this crisis. I've just guaranteed the bank sufficient funds to meet their needs. They'll close down for a week, and then they'll reopen.
You've taken over the bank?
Well, I may lose a fortune, George, but I'm willing to guarantee your people, too. Everybody here, just bring your shares over to the bank, and I will pay 50 cents on the dollar.
That will not be necessary, Mr. Potter. We'll take care of our customers right here.
Well, just make sure you don't close your doors before 6 p.m., or you'll never reopen. And, ladies and gentlemen, remember, 50 cents on the dollar.
Oh, you never miss a trick, do you, Mr. Potter? Well, you're going to miss this one. Now, look, don't panic, folks. Just, you heard Mr. Potter. The bank will reopen next week.
But I've got my money here, George, and I'll take it now.
No, Miss Andrews, you're thinking of this place all wrong, as if I had the money back in the safe. The money's not here. Well, your money's in the Granges house, right next to yours, and in the Kennedy house, and Miss Macklin's house, and 100 others. See, why, you're lending the money to them, and then they're going to build, and then, well, then they're going to pay you back just as best they can. Now, what are you going to do? You're going to foreclose on them?
I've got $240 in here, George Bailey, and $240 isn't going to break anybody.
All right, Miss Andrews, all right. Well, here you are. You sign this, and you'll get your money in 60 days.
60 days?
Well, now, that's what you agreed to when you bought your shares, isn't it? Come on, Miss Andrews, stick to your original agreement on this. Please, give us 60 days.
Are you going to go to the Potters? Better to get half than nothing.
No, Miss Andrews, Miss Thompson, please, wait. Now, listen to me. Mr. Potter's got... If Mr. Potter gets a hold of this building and loan, there'll never be another decent home built in this town. He's already got charge of the bank, he's got the bus line, he's got the department stores, and now he's after us. Why? Because we're cutting into his business, that's why. Because he wants to keep you living in his slums and paying the kind of rent that he decides. Well, we can't let him. We can get through this thing. We just got to stick together. We have to have faith in one another.
Okay, so, as you recall from It's a Wonderful Life, Uncle Billy, so Potter, this is number three. So Potter now is very upset because he has been trying to crush the building and loan ever since George took it over. And even though it is hanging on by the skin of its teeth, it is gnawing at Mr. Potter that he cannot own the building and loan because he owns pretty much everything else in the city of Bedford Falls. So he decides to call George Bailey and, instead of fighting with him, hire him. And, of course, George is taken aback by this. And it's a pretty prickly and underhanded little ruse that our Mr. Potter is playing on an unsuspecting George, who then suddenly sees the light.
Good morning, George. So, it's good to see you again.
Mr. Potter? This is quite an unusual request.
What's that?
You're calling to ask me to pay you a visit?
Oh, I don't know what's so unusual about it. I just thought the two of us should get better acquainted. Here, have a cigar.
Thank you, sir. Oh, this is quite a cigar.
Oh, you like it? I'll send you a box.
Well, I suppose... I'll find out sooner or later, but just what exactly did you want to see me about, sir?
Now, That's just what I like so much about you, George. George, I'm an old man, and most people hate me, but I don't like them either, so it makes it all even. But you know as well as I do that, well, I run practically everything in this town, except the building and loan. You know also that for a number of years I've been trying to get control of it, or kill it. But I haven't been able to do it. You have been stopping me. In fact, George, you have beaten me. And as anyone in this county knows, that takes some doing. Now, take during the Depression, for instance. You and I were the only ones that kept our heads. You saved the building and loan, and I saved all the rest.
Yes, well, most people would say you stole all the rest.
Now, the envious ones say that, George. The suckers. Now, I have stated my side very frankly. Now, let's take a look at your side. Young man, 27, 28, married, making, say, 40 a week.
45.
45. 45, out of which, after supporting your wife and your mother and paying your bills, you're able to keep, say, 10, if you skimp. The child or two comes along, and you won't even be able to save the 10. Now, if this young man of 28 was a common, ordinary yokel, I'd say he was doing pretty good. But George Bailey is not a common, ordinary yokel. No, no. He's an intelligent, smart, ambitious young man who hates his job. And hates the building and loan almost as much as I do. A young man who's been dying to get out of this town ever since he was born. A young man, the smartest one of the bunch, mind you. A young man who has to sit by and watch his friends go places because he's trapped. Yes, sir, he's trapped into frittering away his life, paying nursemaids to a bunch of garlic eaters. Now, George, do I paint a correct picture, or do I exaggerate?
What? Now, what's your point, Mr. Potter?
My point? My point is I want to hire you.
Hire me?
Yeah. I want you to manage my affairs, run my properties. George, I will start you out at $20,000 a year.
$20,000 a year?
You wouldn't mind living in the nicest house in town now, would you, George? Buying your wife a lot of fine clothes, maybe a couple business trips to New York a year, maybe even once in a while Europe. You wouldn't mind that, would you, George?
Boy, would I. You're not talking to anybody else around here, are you? You know, this is me. You remember me, George Bailey?
Yes, yes, this is George Bailey, whose ship has just come in. Providing he has the brains to climb aboard.
Well, what about the building and loan?
Oh, confound it, man! Are you afraid of success? I'm offering you a 3 years contract starting at $20,000 a year. Now, is it a deal or isn't it?
Well, Mr. Potter, I know I ought to jump at the chance of this, but I wonder if it would be possible for me to, you know, think it over for 24 hours or something.
Oh, sure, sure, George. You go home and you talk it over with your wife.
Yeah, I'd like to do that.
Yes, and in the meantime, I'll draw up the papers.
All right, sir.
Okay, George?
Okay, Mr. Potter. No. No, wait a minute here. I don't need to talk to anybody or think it over. I know right now the answer's no. No, doggone it. Now, you sit here and you spin your little webs and you think you own the whole world and that revolves around you and your money. Well, it doesn't, Mr. Potter. You know, in the whole vast configuration of things, I'd say you're nothing but a scurvy little spider. That goes for you, too. And it goes for you, too.
Oh, I love that scene so much. And it's such a great scene between Lionel Barrymore, who plays Mr. Potter, and Jimmy Stewart in the actual film. Just the whole way they play it, it's such a great scene. So the final scene from our recreation of the Potter-Bailey scenes from It's a Wonderful Life, starring Chicago actor David Vogel and me, is the final scene where George now, if you recall in the story, forgetful old Uncle Billy loses $8,000 and puts it in the newspaper that he gives Mr. Potter. And Mr. Potter, of course, finds the $8,000. And boy, what a terrible guy this is. He talk about a rat. Talk about a villain. So Mr. Potter keeps the $8,000 knowing that it is going to put the building and loan into near bankruptcy, as well as potential illegal malfeasance of where is this $8,000? Where is it? What did you do with it, George? And so this is when George, of course, becomes very desperate, just before he meets Clarence, the angel, and then gets redeemed. But this is when George is at his lowest, when he has to now come crawling to Potter. And it's a great scene, and I hope we did it justice.
And we return to It's a Wonderful Life, the George Bailey, Mr. Potter years.
I'm in trouble, Mr. Potter. I need help. Through some sort of an accident, my company's short in their accounts. The bank examiner's up there today. I've got to raise $8,000 immediately.
Oh, so that's what the reporters wanted to talk to you about,
huh? Reporters?
Yes. They called me up from your building and loan. Oh, there's a man there from the DA's office, too. He's looking for you.
Please help me, Mr. Potter. Help me, won't you, please? Can't you see what it means to me and my family? I'll pay any sort of bonus on the loan, any interest. If you want the building and loan, why, I...
George, could it be that there's been a slight discrepancy in the books?
No, sir, there's nothing wrong with the books. I've just misplaced $8,000. I can't find it anywhere.
You? You misplaced $8,000?
Yes, sir.
Have you notified the police?
No, sir. I didn't want the publicity. Harry's homecoming tomorrow, and...
Yeah, they're going to believe that one. What have you been doing, George? Are you playing the market with the company money?
No, sir. No, sir. I haven't.
Well, what is it? A woman, then? You know it's all over town, and you've been giving money to Violet Bick.
What?
Yeah, not that it makes any difference to me, but... Why did you come to me, George? Why don't you go to Sam Wainwright and ask him for money?
I can't get a hold of him, Mr. Potter. He's in Europe.
What about all your other friends? Well,
they don't have that kind of money, Mr. Potter. You know that. You're the only one in town that can help me.
Oh, I see. I've suddenly become quite important. What kind of security would I have, George? I mean, do you have any stocks?
No, sir.
Bonds? Real estate? Collateral of any kind?
I have some life insurance. $15,000 policy.
Yes. And how much is the equity in it?
$500.
Look at you. You used to be so cocky. You were going to go out and conquer the world. You once called me a warped, frustrated old man. Well, what are you but a warped, frustrated young man? Miserable little clerk crawling in here on your hands and knees begging for help. No securities, no stocks, no bonds. Nothing but a miserable little $500 equity in a life insurance policy. George, you're worth more dead than alive. Why don't you go to that riffraff you love so much and ask them to let you have $8,000? You know why you don't? Because they'd run you out of town on a rail, that's why. But I'm going to do something for you, George. Since the state examiner is still here, as a stockholder of the building and loan, I'm going to swear out a warrant for your arrest. Misappropriation of funds.
No.
Manipulation.
No.
Malfeasance.
No, no.
All right, George, you can't hide in a little town like this. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you. In jail.
And there it is, our little recreation of some of the classic Mr. Potter and George Bailey scenes from It's a Wonderful Life. That is me and David Vogel. And I want to thank David for coming in last year and doing that. And I just enjoyed listening to those again. It's a Wonderful Life is not on television as much as it used to be. Gosh, back in the late 80s and early 90s, it was on almost 24 hours. Because at it's the genesis of It's a Wonderful Life is really an amazing story. It was not a huge hit when it was released in 1946 at all, right after World War II. Was not a big hit, and was one of those movies that was just hanging around. And in the mid-80s, PBS, and here in Chicago, Channel 11, used us to play it on Christmas Eve. And it began to get a following over the years. And then the copyright on the movie ran out. And so anyone could just grab a copy, even videotape a copy from another station, if you were a TV station, and run it. And so Christmas, for a few years there, literally became 24 hours of It's a Wonderful Life, to the point where it was driving everybody crazy. It was like, enough already. We get it. We love the movie, but enough is enough. It was on every station. Any station could just throw it on anytime they wanted. And so then about, I would say it's got to be at least 15, 20 years ago now, about 15 years ago, the rights were renegotiated and NBC bought them. And so now NBC usually plays them a couple of days after Thanksgiving and on Christmas Eve. And they'll also sometimes play it on some of their other stations, like the USA Channel and stuff. That's an NBC station. But for the most part, on NBC in Chicago, obviously Channel 5, it's played usually twice, once right around a couple days after Thanksgiving and then on Christmas Eve. And it's still, I'll tell you, it's still a great movie, and it's still, you know what's going to happen, but great performances and amazing how a film that was made in the 40s, 40 years later, suddenly turns into now a what is considered not only a classic holiday film, but a classic film of all time. And it had been hanging around, and it was there for anybody to watch and see. But obviously, the combination, two things really probably helped it. The combination of cable television and the initial introduction of the VCR. Because suddenly, people had control when they could buy a movie and watch whatever they wanted. I mean, I know it's very hard for some younger people to understand or even believe, but we did not have as much freedom to all types of content, movies, music, and things like that, that we do today. It is unprecedented, the kind of immediate access and personal access that we have. 30, 40 years ago, you had to wait for a TV station to play a movie. If it was out of the theater, you had to hope that a TV station would play it. And as I'm saying, 40 years ago, when I say a TV station, I don't mean HBO. I don't mean USA. I don't mean Sundance Channel. No such thing. CBS, ABC, NBC, in Chicago, Channel 9, Channel 11, and your UHF channels, your 26, your 32, and your 44. And those three, you couldn't even get in very clear very often because it was over the air and their signal wasn't strong. But that's all you had. You didn't have anything in your pocket. You didn't have a VCR hooked up to your TV. You were dependent on whatever the networks decided to show you. And so, In the case of It's a Wonderful Life, here's a movie that was hanging around for 40 years. Believe me, when I was a little kid, it was a huge deal. Once a year, CBS would play The Wizard of Oz. And I mean, you stayed home for this because you could never see The Wizard of Oz anywhere except on TV once a year on CBS when they decided to play it. It really was it was a completely different reality. Now you can dial up just about anything you want to watch from any time period at any time of the day. It really is an amazing freedom that we have. And I, as I said, younger people
And if it's not on Amazon Prime, Netflix, Hulu, yeah. or on demand, oh, it's so frustrating.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God. Why don't they have this? What, you know, what am I, in a cave? I mean, they have, there's access to hundreds of thousands of movies and television shows. And if we find the one that they don't have, we're all upset. It's a good point.
You mean
point.
I have to rent this now?
Yeah, exactly. And yet we were so dependent and basically captive to what the networks decided to show us. And really, I mean, I was lucky in that when the VCR came in, I was, the VCR really took hold, I would say, where people, I was early on, I got a beta, Betamax. There were actually two formats. There was a Betamax and VHS, and there were two competing technologies. The Betamax was a smaller tape, and so it had a better picture, but it was a little more expensive. The VHS was longer in terms of duration. The picture wasn't as sharp, but it was cheaper, and so that's why VHS took over. So, of course, I was Mr. Early Adopter, so I got a Betamax, and that thing was, you know, obsolete within 2 years. But it was pretty much around, I would say, about 81, 82 when they really started to take hold, and maybe about 84 when almost everyone had one, or certainly everybody realized they needed to get one. So that's not that long. I mean, we're talking 30-some years here, 32, 33 years. But it really did change the way, as I said, not only that we experienced entertainment, but we were able to learn about it. I would really say that thanks to the introduction of the VCR, that's how I really got into movies in terms of older movies, and really got a better perspective about historical movies, the history of movies. I don't mean historical like the Ten Commandments. I mean the history of movies and older movies and specific actors and directors, and really got into movies because now I had access to them. I didn't have to wait until the late, late, late show on Channel 9 or Family Classics or, once again, the networks. I mean, I remember, I've always heard about Casablanca, for instance, but I don't think before I had a VCR, I never watched the film from beginning to end. And my God, it was like a revelation. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. Never really sat and watched it until I had access to watch it on my own. And part of it was that fun too. Like, ooh, I've got this, I picked this movie that I want to watch on my own. And that was kind of fun part of it too. So I'm really grateful for the VCR because it really helped me in my own personal knowledge of movies and movie history, as well as knowledge about movies and actors and everything else. And it certainly has come in handy in my life and in my career. So it's really been a cool thing to have happened. And I don't think that would have happened because, as I said, we were kind of, you know, we were slaves to whatever the late, late, late show people wanted to show. But to get back to the original thing, It's a Wonderful Life now can be seen a couple of times a year. I hope you enjoy that. David Vogel did a great job as George Bailey, and I hope you enjoyed my interpretation of Mr. Potter, George. So, we will take a little quick musical interlude here and be right back. And we return here to Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic at WGNplus.com. I had an email this week about the podcast. Someone asked me, what's that music that you play in between the segments and at the end of the show? And the guy said, I assume it's an Elton John song. Of course, you are correct. The name of this podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, which is a takeoff on Elton John's album called Captain Fantastic. And so this is Captain Podtastic. And that song is a song called The Captain and the Kid, which was a sequel to that 1975 album that came out in 2006. And so that is the end of this song called Captain the Kid. And it is a reprisal of the original sound of the original song called Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy. But it's with a piano that you hear here as opposed to a acoustic guitar, which is on the original that came out in 1975. So if you want to find that song, it's called The Captain and the Kid, and it is on the album of the same name, and it came out in 2006, Elton John song. So we will now, do we have our little, our music for the Pop Culture Club? Oh, of course we do. When we hear that, the next thing we hear is the voice of Emily Arminetti.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I wanted, before we talked about the Golden Globes, last week we got into an interesting conversation about, I started the show talking about Christmas cards and got so overtaken on the subject that I brought Emily in because Emily sent me a Christmas card with her whole family in it, meaning her and her husband as well as her kids, because my beef was, why does everybody send pictures, a picture card of just their kids? I want to see the parents too. And so I was very happy to bring Emily in as an example of someone who gets it, who put herself in the picture. So I just want to do a quick follow-up, because part of my rant was whether I should even do Christmas cards anymore. You know, is it sort of a passé tradition? You know, with emails and e-cards and all that, are Christmas cards even worth sending out? Now, you said that I should continue to send cards out, Emily, right?
Yes, I'm a firm yes on that.
Okay, well, here's the thing. So I set up, believe me, it was an arbitrary rule. I just said, okay, I sent out like 64 cards this year. So I said, if I don't get at least 32 back, I'm not sending out next year. I have to get at least half back. You know, something for the effort. Because I'm over here writing out cards, spending money on postage. And if, you know, if nobody's going to help me, you know, or give a little back, then, hey, then I'll just be Scrooge. And you said, well, you shouldn't be Scrooge. So there's a part of me that did want to continue doing it, because I do like to spread the Christmas cheer. But there's another side of me, the Scrooge in me.
Grinchy side.
The Scrooge in me, the Mr. Potter in me, George, I'm not going to send out Christmas cards anymore. And so part of me said, if I don't get half back, I'm not sending them. Well, here's an update. This podcast will be posted on December 26th. So that's the official cutoff is Christmas Day. And really, it's Christmas Eve, because you don't get any mail on Christmas Day. So December 24th will have been the cutoff date for me to get at least 32 cards. If I don't get 32 cards, 2017, don't be looking for a card from an Elton Jim.
I think you'll get it.
Well, I have an update. I have an update for you. I have an update. As of the 21st of December, 37 cards.
Wow.
We are over the top.
You're off the charts.
So now I have to go and buy more cards for next year and buy 70-some stamps once again.
Next year is going to be a new gym. Next year, you're designing a digital card. I will help you do it.
What is that?
Well, it means you don't have to go out to the store and buy a pack of cards.
No.
You get you're doing the throwback photo of you with Elton John.
Oh, right, that's right.
Planned out. You know what? We have a whole year to argue about this. I have it all planned out.
Because I do have a photo from 1995 of me and Elton that I took backstage at a concert here in Chicago. And the picture was in August. I took the picture in August, but I brought my Santa hat with me, thinking ahead. And it was so perfect because I had it in a bag. And, you know, Elton certainly didn't know what to expect. And when I walked in, it was so great because he was wearing a red outfit. And I'm like, oh, perfect.
It was meant to be.
Yeah, the funny thing is that I was not wearing red. I don't know what I was thinking, but I was wearing this blue jacket, which was actually one of his jackets at one time. So that's why I wore that.
Oh man!
But yeah, so I have my Santa hat on. So now I put that picture up on my Facebook pages, so it is up there. So you saw that. So you think I should resurrect that picture for next year?
Yes. It's going to be your throwback Christmas card, throwback holiday. Look, you're trying to get in with the millennials. I'm trying to help you.
Well,
okay. You do a throwback card. You're going to design it yourself digitally.
Oh, God.
Okay.
I am.
Hashtag happy holidays.
Okay. I don't even understand what hashtag is.
I know.
When I see that, I don't even know what that means. And do I make that up?
I think you need to have your godson back on for a time.
I know. I'm going to try to have him on. But seriously,
to be honest with you, the millennials are probably so over the hashtag that I'm even setting you behind with that.
So when there's a hashtag something, do I make that up?
Yes.
And where does that hashtag go?
Oh God, we could be here all
I was going to say, do you want to get to the actual pop culture club, or do you want to do another social media lesson? It's your passion.
You need to schedule a millennial meter.
I know. I've been trying to get Patrick back on, believe me.
Patrick, right? If you can get him on, he can explain to you, if they're even still relevant with the millennials, I don't even know if they are, but then he can explain the whole hashtag thing to you.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that all the time.
Although I'm somewhere in between you and Patrick,
right,
in the generation scale, I don't even know if I'm qualified to fully explain the hashtag phenomenon.
Oh, really? Okay. So I'm not that far. I mean, I'm out of it.
Well, no, you're
But I'm not that far out of it. I'm on the fringe.
listen to
millennial Kristen over there.
I'm not a millennial. I'm like on the very.
Are you really?
Edge.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I would still consider. I consider anybody in their 30s a millennial. I mean, I know that there's some weird cutoff dates, but all that cutoff date stuff to me is BS too, because I am considered a baby boomer. My year is the last year. Mm-hmm. And I am not a baby boomer was born in 1946 after the war. That's why the term baby boomer, because when all the horny guys came back from World War II, there were a zillion babies. Everybody was making up for lost time. And there was a baby boom. But it didn't last 20 years.
You might be right, but we'll do a quick litmus test. Okay, question one. Do you have a flip phone?
Yes, you're a baby boomer.
Okay, you're a baby boomer.
Well, see, here's the thing. So, the funny thing is, so if I was born in 65, then I would have been, I'd be considered Generation X, which I don't consider myself Generation X either, because there's some like Generation X stuff that I don't really jive with either.
Maybe,
I am a lost boy.
Lost generation. Lost. Yeah, you're a part of a lost generation.
I am, really.
In between.
No, I do. I really feel like I've always thought about writing a book about called The In-Betweener. Because
go for
I
it.
But yes. here's the problem. There's so few of us, no one would buy it. Cuz no one would care.
It was Douglas Copeland's book Generation X that actually
there was a generation of Xers to buy it. My point is I would probably be talking to people that were born sometime between 62 and 64. So who cares?
They still read books.
Well, there were probably a lot of people born in those couple
because,
of years.
Because what's interesting about me, what I find is, first of all, my parents were older. And so they were Depression era. You know, they lived through the Depression. And so I do have some of that. I have, you know, just being raised by people that were older and lived during the Depression, I do have some of that Depression mentality and a little older mindset on a few things. And plus, I was an only child. And so I think only children are always a little more mature because they're always hanging around adults. I would always go with my mom and dad to their friend's house. Even if I was in the other room, I was always surrounded by adults. I didn't have a house full of kids around me. So I was, I think only children are always a little more mature because they have to find ways to preoccupy themselves, and they are around adults, so they act a little more mature at a younger age. So I do have that pull of the, you know, of the Depression era kind of baby boomer thing. But then I also have the pull, I mean, I'm still very liberal minded, and of the kind of 60s, 70s cool hipster, you know, era. So I'm tugged between those two. And so I think that's why I just feel like I don't belong. I feel like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, that no one will let me play in their reindeer games.
See, write your book though.
Yeah,
and you'd be surprised. Maybe you'll.
Yeah, I've always thought about that. It would just be kind of like here's a philosophy, because like I said, there are some things, you know, if there was a litmus test and there was a little box for, you know, what it takes to be a liberal person, I would have all the boxes checked, whether it's, you know, abortion rights, gay rights, women's rights. You know, I'm not a tree hugger per se, but I mean, I understand the importance of the environment and things like that. So on a litmus test like that, I would certainly check all the liberal boxes. But on the other side, there are some things that I'm not completely like totally hippie and hippy dippy and, oh, you know, we are the world, we are the children. And I think that comes from my, you know, my kind of influence of that other side, that kind of Depression era. So, yeah, I'm torn. I am a psychological wreck.
You're a man without a generation.
I'm a man out of time. Yes, I am a man without. Oh, that could be the subhead. That could be the subhead. The in-betweeners. What did you say?
I said you're a man without a generation.
Yeah.
You could speak that.
The no generation. The ungeneration instead of the uncola. But anyway, so once again, more and more, Emily, we seem to go into the pop culture club, but then we never talk about
it.
Yeah, I don't even know. I think we might just blow this thing off or just have you come in and talk about BS stuff all the time. Forget about this fake premise. But well, let's talk a little pop culture, though, because in the next 2 or 3 weeks, the first of the... We're already seeing best of lists coming out of the best movies, best music, best songs, all that stuff. And so the first, I guess now, important movie award show, and there will be a slew of them in the next 2 or 3 months, is the Golden Globes, which will be on my birthday this year, January 8th.
Oh.
Now, I have to say, we talked earlier in a pop culture club earlier, we talked about Jimmy Kimmel being announced as the host of the Oscars. And once again, I am not crazy about Jimmy Fallon. What's your take on Jimmy Fallon, who will be the host of the Golden Globes?
I mean, I sort of have the same feeling as I have about Kimmel, which is, you know, he'll do a fine job. He's audience friendly. You know, people watch them in their homes every night. And he'll also be, he's also, again, also very celebrity friendly. So it's just kind of it's one of those things where it's kind of a safe pick for them.
Well, it's a very safe pick because
he won't blow our doors. He probably won't blow our doors off, but he'll probably be fine.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about the last 4 or 5 years, the first year that Tina Fey and Amy Poehler did it was great. No one knew what to expect. They came out of nowhere. They really kicked some butt. It was funny. It was edgy. And they were able to deliver it in a fun way. They were a little caustic, but they delivered it in a way that didn't seem mean-spirited, as opposed to Ricky Gervais, who had been the host a couple of years before that, who was just abrasive for the sake of being abrasive. He was drunk, drinking a beer.
Yeah.
And then he did it last year, and he came out with the beer again. And he really was... I love Ricky Gervais, but I wasn't impressed with him last year. So they went, once again, from a rebel last year, bringing back Gervais, and now they went to, as you're saying, a very audience-friendly and very, I mean, I just, Jimmy Fallon, you know, is funny, I guess, but he reminds me of a puppy dog who just wants your approval and your attention. And he's always moving. He's always doing something. You know, he's just spastic.
But that's the thing. Like a puppy dog, he's very cute and endearing and likable. Lovable, I would say.
Yeah, well, I guess.
Even lovable.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's funny. I think he's good. I just don't think he's a good host, especially for a late night show. But now whatever a late night show is these days has completely changed. It's certainly not what it used to be, like Johnny Carson. The entire format and the genre has shifted, thanks to the internet and thanks to a new generation of people that have a different view and a different attention span and a different kind of sense of humor.
But that also may be part of why people like Fallon and Kimmel are being selected for stuff like this, because those two, what they have done with their late night shows is they have been able to make that translate very well to social media and creating, you know, skits and clips.
Oh, definitely. Oh, that's...
And maybe what the networks are hoping is that they can somehow help them get these award shows to translate in a similar way. So...
Yeah. Well, we'll see. So anyway, now the Golden Globes are an interesting animal. The Golden Globes have been around for many years. They're voted on by the Hollywood Foreign Press. There's less than 100 people that vote. So it's not like some huge academy. Less than 100 people. And they are foreign press journalists. You should know that a lot of foreign press entertainment journalists are very starstruck. And they're also, at least they used to be, very insecure in that for a long time, big stars never went over to Europe because they didn't really watch movies that much. Well, in this world where movies now cost hundreds of billions of dollars, studios need to find every available dollar out there. And so now the big stars all go to around the world to promote these movies. But still, the Hollywood press is starstruck. And so what I have found, at least, I don't know if you agree with me or not, a lot of the nominees in the Golden Globes are some of your big stars just because they're starstruck, as opposed to really being worthy of a nomination. That's my take. What do you think?
Maybe.
Did we lose? Go ahead. Are you there? Yeah. Did we lose her?
So
there we go.
No, I'm here.
Okay, you were breaking out. You were breaking out a little. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So yeah, no, I'm saying that. The Golden Globes, to me, have always been, I think, more likely to take chances a little bit. I mean, that's where you sometimes see someone who's a little bit off the beaten path being nominated or given an award. Like, many years ago, I think Madonna was nominated, might have even won a Golden Globe. But that could also speak to your point, too.
Yeah, but the
Lady
people...
Gaga, I think, won a couple of
years
ago.
Well, exactly,
right?
And that's my point, is that they are starstruck. Lady Gaga... I mean, I watched American Horror Story that she was on. She did not deserve to win that. She wasn't the best actress, but she's Lady Gaga, and I think that's the problem. And as I look at some of these nominations, the one thing I do like about the Golden Globes is that they do have more categories. So they have music and comedies and dramas. So that, you know, so it's broken up because...
I also like that but it's nice that it's also film and television.
Yeah, and it is television as well. But my point is that a lot of times funny, you know, comedies are not viewed by the Academy as being worthy all the time. And so your best actor or your best supporting actor and actresses who are in a comedy don't ever get nominated for Oscars because they're not in some deep movie. And so those, sadly, those performances go by the wayside. So at least the Golden Globes do break up the categories into comedies and musicals as one, and then drama as the other. So now, this is a very interesting Best Picture category. Moonlight, Manchester by the Sea, Lion, Hell or High Water, and Hacksaw Ridge. I don't even know. I know one of those movies.
Right,
And barely, I know it just because I know Manchester by the Sea because I've read quite a bit about it because of Casey Affleck, who does a good job. But, I mean, are you surprised by those Best Picture nominees?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when I saw the list, it really struck me.
I didn't even know what Hacksaw Ridge was.
I know, knew so little and had heard so little about any of these films. Like you said, I mean, Manchester by the Sea is getting a little bit of buzz. They're saying Casey Affleck is like phenomenal in it, and I'm really looking forward to seeing that. Also, Michelle Williams is in it, and I don't know how big her part really is, but I'm a huge fan of hers. I think she's great in everything she's in. And then Nocturnal Animals I had heard of because I think they're getting a bit of buzz for it. I think they probably have a little bit of a marketing machine behind it because you've got, you know, Tom Ford directing, Amy Adams, Jake Gyllenhaal. But yeah, other than that, like, I have no idea what these other films are.
I mean, I know Nicole Kidman is in Lion.
Yeah.
And Hell and High Water has Jeff Bridges. Hacksaw Ridge apparently is directed by Mel Gibson. So this goes to my point again of very high profile. And Mel Gibson is nominated for Best Director.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, let's see if this is a comeback for him. Although,
yeah.
I don't know. I think his shenanigans are pretty tough to come back from. But
what would you say?
Yeah, no, so I know. I mean, I don't know.
What would be your favorite movie? What do you think is what? I mean, I don't know how many movies you saw this year, but what would be your favorite movie?
I have seen none of these films. I mean,
forget these. Just for any movie. Forget what they say. What movie?
Any movie this year? I can't even remember the last movie I saw in the theater. Well, you tell me.
Yeah, no, I'm telling you. I'm looking at the...
I can't remember.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm hearing a lot about this. I mean, I certainly did not see any of these Best Pictures for the drama. Now, I'm hearing a lot about... I did on a plane, I did see that Florence Foster Jenkins movie. You know, with Meryl Streep, which was okay. I think it was great. Now, everybody's talking about La La Land with Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone.
Oh, and right.
Now, funny Emma Stone story. So I'm in New York about 3 weeks ago. And we're walking down the street right by NBC. And it's set, and it's, now get this, it's Friday night. It's Friday night. And there is a block-long line of people, mostly young girls, and I mean high school girls, maybe some college, all sleeping on the street. But they've got folding chairs and sleeping bags, and it's barricaded off, and they're all sleeping on the sidewalk. You know, because it's like 11 o'clock at night, and it's right outside NBC. So, so I'm like, what the hell is going on here? I mean, I know it's New York, but these kids are too young to be homeless. So I say to one of them, I said, what are you guys doing?
And she's like, leave us alone.
Yeah, get out of here and give me some money. Wow, you have a deep voice for a 14-year-old girl. And they're like, oh, we're waiting in line for tickets for Saturday Night Live. And I said, oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Now, this is Friday night. Not Saturday during the day. This is Friday night. They're going to sleep over.
Right.
I don't know what time the tickets go on sale the next day or they're handed out because
No, no. I'll tell you what, though, because I know a little bit about SNL tickets, and there are very, very few that you actually even get standing in line. It's a very small audience. And they do once a year, if you want to get advance tickets and not have to wait in line, they do like a lottery. It's like 1 week in August where you send in your details and that's it.
Wow.
So of all the people sitting there in line, probably only like 10 of them actually got in.
Well, here's when I felt 175 years old. So I said, what are you doing? Well, we're waiting in line for Saturday Night Live tickets. You know, they're all giggly. And I said, oh, who's the host? Emma Stone. She's Emma Stone. She's awesome. Yeah. That's what they said. She's awesome.
She's a little bit, like, she's in her 20s. She's not, like, super young. Like, I don't get what the appeal is.
Believe me, I was shocked. And I was like, oh, my God. I mean, once again, don't get me wrong. I have done my share of sleeping out for tickets. I certainly did it in my heyday. I had my chaise lounge and my blanket, and I was sleeping outside of the Rosemont, then the Rosemont Horizon, now the Allstate Arena, for Bruce Springsteen tickets. I was sleeping outside for Elton John tickets. I've done that. But, wow, Emma Stone? And it wasn't warm out. It was cold.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow. And to your point now, there was not even a guarantee that they were going to get these tickets, apparently, right?
Oh, no, no, no.
Holy smokes.
From what I understand, very few people actually get tickets that way.
Wow, well,
Very few people get tickets at all because, like I said, it's a very small studio. There aren't that many.
Yeah, wow. I was shocked. So it looks like La La Land is going to probably be a big Oscar favorite, and certainly I think Emma Stone is going to get a nomination for the Oscars. It'll be interesting if she wins this. There's a lot of talk about Natalie Portman playing Jackie Onassis. It's going to be interesting. Now, the thing about the Golden Globes, the reason why I'm not even that concerned about going over the nominees or the winners is because I really don't consider these. To me, the Golden Globes are more of kind of like an event. You know, everybody gets, they all get drunk. Everybody's drinking. They're all sitting at tables. And they always say, well, you know, the Golden Globes are a precursor to the Oscars. They really aren't. Because of what I said before about the Hollywood press kind of always going for the big names. There will be some crossover. Right. But, you know, the funny thing is, I really believe the Golden Globes, the only reason the Golden Globes are even important anymore is because of the red carpet phenomenon. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah. Well, everybody loves that.
Right, but here's my point. You might be a little too young, but there was a time when the Golden Globes were not even televised over the last 25 years. And if they were televised, they were on some obscure channel, many times like TNT or or 30 years ago, like on channel 32, you know, before it was Fox on a UHF station.
Right.
But when the red carpet phenomenon became so big in the last 15 or 20 years when Joan Rivers really brought it back and started interviewing people and then the paparazzi with the magazines and everything, all of a sudden the Golden Globes took on a higher importance because from Hollywood's concern, hey, there's a red carpet with a lot of you know, famous people wearing dresses.
Yeah, but I do think it is, well, for audiences, I do think it's more fun to watch because it's a little more laid back than the Oscars. They are drinking, you know, something funny always happens as a result of that.
Don't you love how they can't get to the stage either?
Well, and also, oh yeah, never. They can never get to the stage. But also, I think last year, Lady Gaga almost like elbowed Leonardo DiCaprio trying to get to the stage.
And remember that there was a big controversy that he was sort of giving her a look like, how could you have won?
Yeah. Like the side eye. So, I mean, it's more fun. But I also think, though, that part of that phenomenon is that now there are so many, there's a whole awards season. And so now I feel like the celebrities actually, they come out for everything now because there is this idea that you just create this momentum as the award season, you know, unfolds. And I think now they get swept up in all of it, you know, because there's like, whatever, there's like the People's Choice Awards, the Critics' Choice Awards, the SAG Awards, the Golden Globes, you know, the Oscars. And oh, don't forget, there's like always like an Oscars like luncheon and whatever. And so I feel like now they do the whole awards season, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I will certainly watch the Golden Globes. I mean, I think if you're a pop culture fan and a movie fan, you do have to watch it. But I must admit that, as I said a few times here, is that I unfortunately don't go to as many movies as I used to just because, I'll be honest, like I said, I don't like, I'm not a big, superhero fan. And
right.
I'm not a big romantic comedy fan. And I'm not
right.
And then the good movies that I want to see are always at one theater for 1 week.
Yeah.
Far away. And if you don't go then, you miss it. So I wind up waiting and seeing it, you know, on pay-per-view later or something. And now, especially as I'm looking at a lot of these nominations, a lot of these movies haven't even come out in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little strange. And maybe it's that a lot of them are going to come out over the next couple of weeks. I don't know, but it does seem strange to me. Like, there's not a whole lot. I just don't know a lot. I mean, and I read about this stuff all the time.
I know.
It takes up way more of my brain than it actually
Me too. And I was just, like, looking at this going, wow. Now, here's the best part. So in the best performance by an actor in a supporting role in a motion picture, from the Florence Foster Jenkins, which is that Meryl Streep movie about the woman that really couldn't sing and, you know, and she, you know, hired out Carnegie Hall. Simon Helberg from Wolowitz, from Big Bang Theory, is nominated from that movie. So now you gotta think that when he's walking around the set now at Big Bang Theory, he's going up to Johnny Galecki and going, yeah, I know you're making about $20 million more than me, but I'll be at the Golden Globes. Where are you going to be? Coley Lococo, what the heck's her name? Keely Kaki, what's her name?
Kaley
Cuoco. Where are you going to be at the Golden Globes? You going? Because I'm invited. See, I'm a nominee.
Well, you know, I mean, even Leonardo DiCaprio got his start on Growing Pains. So, you never know.
I'm just saying, what the trajectory can be. Oh, no, because what I'm saying is that, you know, that Jim Parsons, Johnny Galecki, and Kaley Cuoco, they all make more money than Raj and Wolowitz do, even though it's basically an ensemble show. So at least Wolowitz gets a last laugh because now he's a Golden Globe nominee. He may not be able to buy a yacht and a 17-room home, but he could have a Golden Globe.
Yeah, he's one. He's got one hurdle cleared in the EGOT race.
Well, we will see what happens on January 8th. We'll certainly talk about these. But, like I said, I think the main thing I wanted to ask you was just, am I the only one that feels out of touch here? So apparently you do too.
No, not at all. I mean, that was exactly my reaction when I saw this. I was like, I don't know if, like, they're not doing a lot of press, or there are just a lot of small indie movies nominated this year, or if there just aren't that many great movies this year. I don't know. But yeah. I mean, I really felt very out of touch too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to know. If at least because I always feel out of touch. So it's nice to see that you're feeling out of touch too now.
Well,
I think you need a millennial meter.
Maybe not as much as you are.
I think you need a hashtag.
I don't think I like to be painted with that brush.
Well, we will talk to you next week. Take care. And just so you know, the Cashmere Woods candle is unbelievable.
It's a hit for the holidays.
Oh, Cashmere Woods candle.
I feel like if you do not get a carton of Cashmere Woods from the Glade people delivered to the station, I will be shocked.
I'm telling you, Cashmere Wood candle.
I will be shocked.
I mean, the air freshener is great. The candle, oh, unbelievable.
Yeah, you're fully ensconced.
I am ensconced in Cashmere Wood candle. Take care, Emily.
I think it sounds like the perfect holiday.
It is. Take care, Emily.
Thanks, Tim.
All right. That's our version of the Pop Culture Club. And that brings to an end another version of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic here at WGN Plus. You can go on the WGN website, WGNradio.com, and then there is a prompt that says WGN Plus. And you click that. And then there's another prompt about entertainment, and then you go onto that, and there's my landing page. And that's how you find this every Monday, a new episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic, which is the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.